Hi everyone, this is Jeffrey Lin here with the Shut Up and Dribble podcast. Today I have two very special guests. This is actually the first time I've had two people on, so it's momentous for many reasons. So I have Ray and Baldwin from the Real Asian podcast here, and today we're going to talk about everything Warriors today. So Ray, Baldwin, would you please introduce yourselves?
What up, Jeffrey? Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Baldwin.
What up, man? All good. I'll go first. I'm Baldwin from the Bay Area, born and raised here. I'm a photographer and digital marketer, and of course, I'm a co-host of the Real Asian podcast. Yeah, just wanted to thank you, Jeffrey, for inviting us to be on here. Excited to talk about the Warriors.
That's right. And we are talking about the movie The Warriors, right? The old 1979s action movie. Classic movie. Warriors, come out and play, yay. Hi, Jeffrey, what's up? I'm glad to be on your pod. I'm Raymond Liu. Hi, everyone out there. I'm a co-host and also producer for Real Asian Podcast. What I do during the day, I do a number of things, honestly. Part of a nonprofit, Hate is a Virus, and then I work for a university. That's the whole thing. Bay Area, born and raised, and diehard Warriors fan, but also a diehard Niner fan. Woo, it's a stressful weekend, definitely.
Stressful. You're going against Green Bay again, I'm sure. Brings back, well, probably good. Yeah, pretty good memories.
You have a good history.
No, I remember. Yeah.
It'll just be
the last time Niners played Green Bay, it was very embarrassing for the Packers. They just kind of ran all over them. Literally ran all over them.
Yes. But you know, we don't have Raheem Mostert this time around. But Elijah Mitchell is really good.
Next best thing.
Elijah Mitchell is pretty good. I think it doesn't matter. I think if any of us could go play running back for the Niners, and we'd probably get like 50 yards. Just, you know, automatically. Just with how they...
Or any of us could play quarterback. Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
I see where you stand
now. You know what? I'm not giving up on Jimmy G, but man, he's got a long way to go. I'm sorry. No, this is not a Niners episode.
Close enough. Warriors adjacent, I would like to say. Okay, well, thank you both for coming on. It's good to have Bay Area natives on because I'm not from the Bay Area, so I would really love your perspectives on this. So please just give me...
Where are you from?
I'm from...
Yeah, where are you from?
Georgia, actually? Atlanta. From the suburbs around there. Okay. Yeah.
Are you a Hawks fan?
I am a Hawks fan, yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a little tough this year. I think they way overachieved last year with some good injury luck.
Last year was good.
Yeah, but hopefully they can turn it around a little bit. I think they just traded away Cam Reddish. I think that'll help in the sense of addition by subtraction because he was taking a lot of shots away and he definitely showed some flashes, but was not the most consistent player. So you kind of hope that, you know, with... His place in a rotation will be taken up by more consistent players. But I think we just really need to improve our defense a lot. And I think Okongwu coming back helps quite a bit. We're there because we have good minutes at center.
Wait, Okongwu or Capella? Because Capella's coming back
today. Yes, Capella came back today. Okongwu came back probably a couple of weeks ago. But he adds some more defense. I think we had Gorgui Jang play backup center before, but I think Okongwu will help.
How's Trae Young doing? Is he having a pretty good season?
Trae Young's having a really good season just by the numbers. Quietly. Yeah.
He's a scorer, so he'll get his numbers.
Yeah. Oh, he's a passer too. So yeah, he's doing well. And you know, it's always been kind of like the defense for the Hawks. I think we might be top five offense, but then like bottom five defense, and that's not gonna
cut it.
So okay, well, finally getting to the Warriors. So So if you all could just give me some of your background on how you grew up as Warriors fans.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go first. So I've been a Warriors fan since about like sixth grade or so. So probably that's like around 12 years old, right? And that's around like 2002, 2003. But it was when we had, you know, like Jay Rich, Mike Dunleavy, Troy Murphy, Eric Dampier, and I think like Eric Musselman was a coach at the time. But yeah, I remember when we drafted like Biedrins, like wondering who the hell that guy was. It was around the same time also that when I started really following the NBA and the league, and I've been a fan ever since. Like their last season in Oracle, actually, I had season tickets, so I was able to go to a lot of games, and I also had tickets to their last championship run. So I was at that game where versus the Cavs, game one, where JR got the rebound and he didn't call timeout.
I was at that game.
We were like, what the?
Yeah, and then
LeBron was like, that infamous meme of doing?
LeBron. Yeah, gesturing to him.
Thanks, JR.
So yeah,
you'll get your ring in the mail.
Thank you. Yeah. So I've been a fan for a long time, and nowadays I still follow them really closely. Like I watch every game if I'm home. So big Warriors fan.
Mm. Damn, going way back. I've not been the longest fan, but I became a fan as soon as I really became a fan of basketball. So I haven't been watching basketball like for the majority of my life. Probably started really getting into basketball around 2010, 2011-ish. And, you know, I liked them because they were the Bay's team. I think for me, as any, you know, Bay Area native, I'm always supporting the Bay Area team. But, and I really like Monte. When I watched him a lot, and I thought he was a great player. I had heard about the We Believe team, 2007, I believe, when I was in school, but didn't really follow it all the way through. Again, people were talking about it in high school, but I was like, okay, cool, Warriors. I know who they are, but that's really the extent of it. At the time, I was more of a football fan, honestly, so I didn't watch that much basketball at the time. But as I think for me, as I continue to learn more about the game, like just watching it, the rules and all this stuff, I found it really, really exciting. Way more exciting, a little bit more exciting than football for sure. But watching it, then obviously the Warriors like took it up a notch by completely changing the whole game. You know, primarily because of Steph. So that's the extent of my basketball knowledge.
Yeah, no, that's great. I was gonna. So We Believe it was 2007, and then.
Yeah.
Again, Steph was drafted 2008 or 2009, around that.
2009.
Yeah.
That's
right. Yeah. So that's like a good time. And then they really started cooking 2013 and 14.
It's like yeah. I think that's when they first went to their first playoff series with Steph and the crew.
I remember watching. I think it was the 2013 first round or. Yeah, I think it was the first round, but it was against the Denver Nuggets, and Steph had like a crazy third quarter, as he usually does. But this is when people were just like, oh my God, this guy can catch freaking fire. And I was watching it in San Pablo and at this bar, and the place was just freaking going nuts when he was just hitting threes from all over the places, and they just had that run. And I think that's when I was like, dude, the Warriors are so exciting to watch, especially Steph Curry.
Yeah.
I think that's when he started to like actually become a star, right? Because before he was like a scorer. You were worried about his ankles, but that first playoff series when he caught fire, he was going off, hitting all those threes. Like that's when I think he arrived in the NBA and people started to take notice, really.
Mm-hmm. He was always a good three-point shooter. People knew that. But then he just started putting up ridiculous shots. It's like, what? Mm-hmm. Like, let me just chuck it up and then, oh shit, it goes in. Oh my God.
No, that was, Warriors were 6 seed. The Nuggets were the 3 seed. That's when they won like 52 games or something. And then they lost in six games. And then they played the Spurs and that went to 6 games. And that was really tight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I remember that. So exciting.
Yep. Yeah.
So much from us promise, and then 2015 happened and we're like, thank God.
Yeah. Yes.
Because at that point, you know, 2013, 2014, you're kind of, you know, as they kept losing in the like second or in the second rounds, and you're like, man, I hope they're not like that team that's good to the playoff, good enough to get to the playoffs.
It always gets eliminated,
you know. But then again, I would not want that.
Yeah, you don't want to be the Clippers, basically, right?
that was exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. I was exactly Shots thinking. Fired. I was like, we wouldn't want to be the Clippers because they were there. And there was like, remember at the time, there was like, oh, Clippers and Warriors, there's this rivalry going on. And I'm like looking back at it now, I'm like, no, we pretty much own the Clippers every time. Like they probably won maybe one or two games, but even in the regular season and definitely in the postseason, we pretty much smashed on them. I think we lost to them once in the postseason, but that was it. I was like, that's not a rivalry.
Yeah.
Well,
that one hurt though.
Well, to be fair,
I remember that series.
I think you all only played them one time in the postseason in 2014. Mm-hmm. That was a Donald Sterling one. Mm-hmm. So I think they.
I remember that.
Yeah.
That was when the last game, like when they knew they were going to win it. I don't know if you guys remember this, but like Doc Rivers did that little fist pump. It's like, we're going. We're going to win.
Boo. I mean, Doc Rivers is great.
It's okay.
But as a Clippers coach,
we got the last laugh.
It worked out for us. Definitely, Warriors have owned Chris Paul over the years. So, yeah. So, I take it, Baldwin, are you both from the East Bay, or are you all from, like, the city, or, like, South Bay? Where do you...
I've been born and raised in the East Bay, so I lived
You went to the dark.
San Leandro. Yeah, I did. Right now, I live in the city. Okay. I moved here about four months ago, but I lived in the East Bay, like San Leandro, Hayward, Pleasanton, that area for like my whole life. So I'm definitely East Bay person.
Got it.
You left us just like the Warriors. I'm just kidding. Exactly, I haven't even been living in Oakland that long.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I was like, "What are you talking?" So, what about you?
You know what though? I primarily grew up in the South Bay, so I have no real dog in this fight. But now that I am a Oakland resident, as of 6 months, although I did live in Berkeley for a year, so that counts. I'm gonna throw that into my East Bay residential bank.
You got some East Bay.
Berkeley's very different from the rest of the East Bay.
It's a little different.
I said East Bay, okay.
Yeah.
Take that away from me.
Even when I lived in Berkeley, I wasn't like I live in the East Bay. I was like I live in Berkeley. It just feels very different.
How dare you? I just kidding. I know. I'm very different. But yeah, I live in Oakland now, and. But yeah, mostly in the South Bay. But yeah, it's always been, I mean, even when you drive around here, even before I was living here, I mean, there's a lot of Warriors, like old art culture, like strewn about everywhere on the side of buildings and everything like that. So it was definitely like you could see it, visually see the spirit of the Warriors in Oakland.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is actually great because I wasn't entirely sure, Baldwin, which part of the Bay you were from. Because I knew you were from, like, I thought you were, because you grew up in the city or, like, the South Bay. So, you know, I'm interested in this kind of divide between East Bay Warriors fans and essentially, like, SF Warriors fans. Because there seems to be this really big divide that was really highlighted when the Warriors... We're moving from Oracle to Chase Center. So what are y'all like thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, for me, I think that the perception is that the East Bay Warrior fans are considered quote unquote true Warrior fans, meaning that we've been there when they were bad, right? So we lived through the shitty years, and you know, to understand how bad it was, you really had to live through it and watch those games, because it's one thing to know that they were bad, but it's another thing to like experience it. Like I tell people there's bad teams, and then there's Nick Van Exel bad, okay? Like, when Nick Van Exel is meant to be the star of your team, who we traded our actual star for, which was Anton Jameson, like, you know it's bad. And, you know, the real ones will remember watching the games when we'd be up by 10 with, like, 5 minutes left with the hope of winning, and then they end up losing the game, like, all the damn time.
Right. But you would still watch.
So, like, I would still watch, and then I'd get my heart broken, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, going back to your question, Jeffrey, what's the divide? I think the fact that we, like as East Bay Warrior fans, have that shared experience, and it's sort of like it really bonds us. And I think that's a huge component of our relationship to the Warriors team and the franchise and the city, really. And if you were to see like, like how I'd say it, if you were to see a real life experience of that divide in terms of how I like how I saw it, is true Warrior fans would stay until like the end of the game, even though if we knew we were going to lose. Like if there's less than 2 minutes on the clock and we're down by 10, like I'm not leaving. But bandwagon fans, you know, the newer ones,
they just want to beat traffic.
Like, yeah, like they're just there for the hype, really, and they would leave the minute they knew the game was over. So, how about you, Ray?
What's your response?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I mean, wait, first of all, when did I become the SF representative over here? You're like, what's your rebuttal? I'm like, wait a minute, why did I? I actually prefer that the Warriors, I wish the Warriors had stayed in Oakland or in Oracle. And it's pretty sad that they left. But, you know, going to games in both arenas, and I'm just going to go off of purely anecdotal and my own experience, similar to what Baldwin was saying, you know, the vibe is just very different. I think with Oakland or the games at Oracle, which were primarily people probably from Oakland or in the surrounding East Bay, everyone was just super friendly. It had Bay Area vibes all the way through, and like hyphy, and people were just like so excited regardless of who they were playing. And you know, the chemistry between all the fans, people were just like high-fiving each other all throughout when you're like walking around Oracle. I mean, also people were getting hammered, including myself at Oracle. People would just be drinking it up, but it felt like a party, you know. And I went to a game at Chase, and Chase Center is amazing, actually, but the vibe is totally different. It feels like more of like a business conference. Like there's just a whole bunch of people with lanyards and business casual dressing, and you could tell these are probably employees of a company that the company bought a whole bunch of tickets from the Warriors and said, hey, you know, you won this raffle at work, would you like to go to a Warriors game? And this person's probably like, sure, you know. And they get their own suite, they get their own VIP section, they get their own bars. And so that's the vibe that I was getting. It was very much business conference. I don't know if there's a real divide between like fans. I think I still saw at Chase Center people who were probably from Oakland who just went with the team. But yeah, I think the makeup of the crowd was very different when I was going to Chase versus Oracle.
Do you feel like there are more diehard Warriors fans in the East Bay or in the city? How is it? I think that's how, yeah.
Like going to the game or just in general?
Living in the cities?
Yeah, I guess in general. Yeah, does it seem like it's... Like, I feel, you know, in Oakland, I feel people are like repping the Warriors like very often. Like, I see it a lot. Mm. And then I know I haven't been to the city in like for more than an hour in like a year and a half. But I mean, is it like that?
Wait, where are you living now?
I live in Oakland. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you're in Oakland. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I would agree with you. I feel like there's definitely more diehard Warriors fans in the East Bay in Oakland. Is that like what you said is kind of true? Actually, living here in the city, I see like some Warriors gear here and there, but it's not like all over the place, you know, like it is in Oakland. And I think like another component of it is the character and population of the cities themselves. I think Oakland is considered more of a basketball town, and they have like a grassroots basketball presence there. Like, I don't know if you guys remember the video game NBA Street Volume 2. You guys ever played that?
They had
an outdoor, an outdoor like streetball court in the game that's based off of the Mosswood courts in Oakland. And so, you know, that contrast is reflected in the elements of the video games, how Oakland would historically just like draw bigger crowds than San Francisco, and Orca Arena, which used to be called Arena in Oakland, by the way, they would still sell out games even though we sucked, and they didn't care about how bad the Warriors were.
Yeah.
We just wanted to watch our teams play. And then contrast that with San Francisco, I think that the perception is that SF fans are only fans when we're successful. If they start losing again, you know, that's when we'll see where the real fans are. Like Chase Center's in San Francisco now, there's a high ticket price. Who's gonna make it out to those games when they're losing?
Right.
Yeah.
And then you it's also this idea, I think, for me, you know, to answer the question, I do think there's probably more diehard fans definitely in living in the East Bay. And I think it's just because SF has a culture of like transplant culture. I mean, most people, especially in the big tech center of the world, they're coming from all over to work at a tech company that's in SF, as opposed to, you know, Oakland residents, where most of the residents are homegrown. Now we're seeing, you know, obviously the effects of gentrification in SF start to bleed out also into Oakland and throughout the whole Bay Area. But, you know, in Oakland, there's just seems to be a lot more of a homegrown environment vibe that people still love the Warriors. Now, they probably won't go see the Warriors because, as you mentioned, Baldwin, the ticket prices are crazy expensive compared to, you know, and it's just been steadily, I mean, it was pretty expensive, you know, at Oracle too, but then when it moved to Chase, it was like really expensive. I think I read that it was like $600 a seat now for like pretty, like, insane. Which used to be like half of that. And I think people still rep Warriors all throughout around this in this Oakland area, and I've been in both cities, spent some significant time, and most people around here they'll sport a Warriors cap or shirt or jacket, and you know, at least at some restaurant that I'm at least one person.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, so you, Ray, you brought up the gentrification, and I think that's really important kind of lens to view this divide between the East Bay and the city, because it seems like there's, you know, as you mentioned, there are a lot of transplants in the city where they're going to like work at tech, and you know, in Oakland it's not, and I think Oakland is also kind of seen as historically kind of like the more like dangerous like place where, you know, lots of, you know, people of color like live there, whereas opposed to like the city, it's become more gentrified and there are fewer like people of color, particularly Black people, are being pushed out of the city. And so sometimes there can be this dynamic where it seems more being drawn out like Black and white, like racial lines, where the people, especially the Black people in the East Bay, you know, who've gone through the hard times, not only like economically and like socially, but also like winning record wise, they've gone through the hard times. And now the people in the city, or people with the techies, or you know, the transplants who are coming in, who are predominantly white, they are kind of enjoying the good times. Well, they were supposed to enjoy the good times, and then Steph Curry got injured, and Klay Thompson got injured, and you know, lots of things happened. Yeah. But they are now enjoying the good times again, you know, as much as you can during COVID. So I guess in that Black white like racial divide, I don't know. I've never kind of seen this place where like Asian Americans fit in there, because I guess you could say, you know, lots of Asian Americans work in tech, but there are also like lots of Asian Americans who live in the East Bay and, you know, probably have like stronger ties to like the, you know, the communities of color like there. And so, and I kind of wonder, it's just never, we're just like, it doesn't feel like we're like ever like discussed in that, in this speech about, I guess, kind of like gentrification and things like that. So I'm wondering, where do you all think like Asian Americans fit in into this kind of equation?
We're on the Black side, of course. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I think Asian Americans definitely have that credibility of being true Warriors fans, if we're talking from that perspective. Simply because like we've showed up throughout the years, like back in the day, we were at the games, we've been rocking the gear, they see us in the Warriors fandom, like in the streets, we're in the community. And I feel like that's been recognized by both fans and the organization. And it's why the Warriors recently have had a huge emphasis on supporting Asian culture, like in their games, like during Lunar New Year,
Filipino Heritage Night,
the Chinese jerseys. Yeah, exactly. Filipino Heritage Night. And they even actually have like branded gear oriented towards Asian cultures, like Filipinos and Chinese culture. And I think that's because Asian American fans are a big part of the Warriors community and history. So, you know, in terms of where do they fall along the Black and white racial lines, I think we're like kind of like separated from it. I don't know if we, if Asian Americans are considered leaning towards one way or the other along that spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the black and white divide is a thing because it's so, you know, binary of each other, you know? I mean, it kind of is akin to the national conversation of just racial issues in America. It's always been a black and white issue, but then, and then Asian Americans and obviously Latin Americans, like everyone is kind of in between that. It's just, it's easy to use black white because it's such a opposite ends from each other. So, you know, I think the Warriors do a good job of appealing to Asian American culture. And so as a people, there's, I think we just grown accustomed to that type of celebration that they do, and we appreciate that. So I think as long as the team continues to do that and support the communities, I think I'll be happy with that. Now, I don't know if there's any, if they're doing anything to tokenize that conversation, but I haven't felt that. Again, they have a pretty, seems like they have a pretty diverse, you know, staff and everything. Front office, so they do celebrate diversity. I will say, you know, when you brought this question up, Jeffrey, in terms of like the black and white racial lines between Oakland and SF, and I was kind of wondering, I was like, why, you know, Oakland has historically been kind of the city to where most black people, and there's a heavy black population there, and San Francisco had one too, but then with the tech boom and everything like that, it kind of priced out a lot of the black communities, and then now you see a lot of, you know, white people owning homes and also, you know, moving in and pricing everything out, and it just became like more of a question of like classism, I guess, in a way. And I guess because when you include classism, there's always an aspect of the lower class. There's this perception of where the lowest class is typically made up of lower income communities, and even within the Bay Area, that tends to be black and brown people, right? Even within as progressive and diverse the Bay Area is, there's still a classist structure that we have to deal with, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely right. There are plenty of really, really poor Asian American communities out there. I don't think those communities aren't always seen, or they're not always talked about. And they're certainly part of that, the victims of like gentrification and everything in Oakland. So I do think when viewing kind of like that lens, the class part, I think it's important to view it through that too, because it's almost like this important symbol is just being taken away, and it just seems like with money and with the, because the reason why like the Warriors moved to Chase Center was, you know, basically to like make more money, and because not only, so the Warriors, they not only kind of own the Chase Center, but they also own a lot of the buildings around there, and so it's really like a space where, you know, it's a retail space, it's office space. I think Uber was going to open up like an office building there, and then there's some like restaurants around there. And so it's really kind of like this like money-making operation for the Warriors. Yep. And you just, the area around Oracle did not kind of benefit from the kind of investment that Chase Center appears to be getting.
To say the least.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we weren't in the room. It's interesting because I was, you know, was reading up in terms of why the move was there in the first place. And of course the Warriors wanted a more prosperous opportunity by moving over to Mission Bay and this whole developing area, like you said, Jeffrey. But there's always this aspect of when things get good, we're going to move to San Francisco. Like if we're coming from Oakland, as if SF is like the greener grass of the two. And it's really unfortunate, because when you think about why, or the consideration of keeping the Warriors at Oracle And, you know, they struck that deal to where the Warriors would help renovate. There was a renovation plan with Oracle, and then they ultimately decided to leave. And then Oakland and Alameda County wanted to tell them, like, hey, you owe us for some money because you're leaving, you're terminating the contract. And of course the Warriors appealed to it. I think you read that, right, Jeffrey, where they appealed to not pay. It was like some of 40-ish million. The Warriors owe Oakland and Alameda County owed $45 million. And I don't know, they probably will pay that off in installments. But yeah, they owe Oakland and Alameda that much money. And you think, okay, why didn't they just stay and help develop the area around Oracle?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you guys are bringing up a really interesting point. Because I feel like the situation and what you guys are talking about, it shows the dynamic and relationship between these two cities that are so different in character, but still like linked together so strongly.
Yeah.
Like San Francisco is considered the city, you know, it's the gem of the area.
Also, a nickname for SF was the Emerald City. Have you guys ever heard of that?
Oh, what? I don't know if it's called
Emerald City. I never heard of that.
Yeah, there's an article I was reading. Not from here, though. Someone was like, oh, I'm so sad that the Warriors are moving to the Emerald City. And I was like, who the hell calls it?
Contest that. Yeah.
Yeah, who the hell calls SF the Emerald City?
Well, it's like people call San Francisco, like Frisco. I've heard some people refer to it.
Yeah, no one says Frisco.
No one says, yeah.
If you're from here, you don't call it.
All you listeners out there, don't call it Frisco. Yeah. Okay.
And don't call it San Fran either.
Don't call it San Fran.
San Francisco, SF, or the city. Yep. That's how I've always understood it.
No one calls it San Fran or Frisco.
Wait, so just also a point of clarification. Is the town Oakland, I'm assuming? Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I
mean, even that's kind of demeaning in the sense that Oakland's a town.
Right.
But
there's
SF
the city,
is a city.
And then Oakland's a town.
Yeah. I mean, they take pride in it, though.
That's
like,
true.
Being the town.
Yeah. Because you think about, like, a town is a lot more friendly, right? A town is smaller. You know people mm-hmm. in a town as opposed to a city where it's, like, really bustling and chaotic in a way.
Yeah, yeah. But going back to the earlier point, so, like, SF is, like, where all the attention is focused, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where all the money is going. And I feel like Oakland is always considered the neglected, like, sister city.
Yeah.
And it's always overlooked in terms of any sort of investment. And it's always in San Francisco's shadow. And to me, it's always perceived as undesirable when contrasted with San Francisco, at least from the outside perspective. And, like, case in point, this move just shows that, like, you have to wonder how much consideration was really there in keeping the Warriors in Oakland. Like, how much effort was there?
I will say, I have to imagine probably some blame has to go on Oakland and Alameda County too. And
yeah,
only,
for sure.
Only because I work in a public institute and I work with private public partnerships. And working at a public institute or institution when it comes to construction is a huge pain in the ass. So there's this thing called public works, and basically it's if you're working on public land, i.e. the city, and you're doing any kind of construction, they have to pay a thing called prevailing wage, which is just basically the union's level of, like, you have to pay this wage regardless of which contractors you have to use. So if I'm the Warriors and we say, hey, we want to work on this project, or we want to, like, let's say we want to renovate Oracle, right? Hey, we're thinking about, we're moving in, we're going to promise or invest X amount of million dollars to renovate Oracle. But because Oracle sits on public land, and this is all assumption right here, but city officials will probably be like, okay, great. If you want to do this, it's going to cost this much, and you have to pay this much, and you have to use our contractors, you have to use blah, 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 because that's the same crap that I go through at work. The Warriors would be like, wait a minute, you're telling me, like, a $20 million project is going to become a $40 million project, right? And yes, they probably could afford that, but it's a matter of principle, right? If something that could be costing $20 million. And because probably Oakland and Alameda County was saying, yeah, I mean, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to make sure it's up to code and construction, all these things get triggered every step of the way, especially when you're renovating buildings. And I will tell you, and this is... Hopefully, no state fire marshals come out. But state fire marshals they fucking nickel and dime you like crazy. I don't know if I'm going to get canceled that, but working at where I'm at right now, the state fire marshal, Jesus Christ, they look for every opportunity.
They have to justify their existence, right?
Exactly. And Jesus Christ, they find every single excuse to be like, well, that's going to, you're going to need a permit for that. And because I have to work on this permit, this is going to charge this much. And it goes to the state and it's like, oh my goodness gracious crap, we're just putting up a fence, you know? So but yeah. I have to imagine that's probably a little bit of that battle between the Warriors and Oakland, where they were just probably got so fed up of dealing with the public's stuff.
I think the Oakland A's are going through the same process. I know they've been trying to build the Howard Terminal for like the past 20 years, and I think it looks like some documents were approved this past December, and looks like they might finally go through with it. But it does take a lot of time and investment on behalf of these teams to really start to get started on, you know, renovating or building or anything like that. But I am thinking, you know, there's been a lot of kind of like economic research on the value of a sports team to a city and things like that. And I think from what I remember from my sports economy class back in 2012 is that it actually does not add much value to city, especially if you think about the kind of, you know, a lot of the times parts of these stadiums are publicly financed. And that's a lot of taxpayer money having to go to these things where you probably don't have a, you know, some jobs are created temporarily with construction. Some jobs are like more permanent with like concessions and everything. But, you know, those aren't necessarily high-paying jobs, right? Most of them would probably be closer to, like, minimum wage. And perhaps that money could be invested somewhere else. And, you know, it kind of makes me think, like, what's, like, really the value of the Warriors beyond kind of, like, this like, esoteric kind of, like, fan emotional thing, which is important, I think. But at the end of the day, is this just kind of like a bread and circuses sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, and that's an argument, I guess, for Chase Center, because when you think about the Warriors and basketball season, it's only, I mean, whenever the timing gets right, it's really only from like September, October-ish over to April, May. I mean, if you're in the finals, then it could go into June. And even then, you don't have games every single day. And so you need a venue center to be able to attract other types of events and entertainment. And that's pretty much what happened with Candlestick and the Niners. I always got to bring it back to the Niners. But that's pretty much what happened with Candlestick, right? Candlestick was a freaking run-down piece of barely waiting for a 30-mile wind to blow it down kind of building. But obviously, it was a very special place, but it was also sitting on radioactive land. But because it was so run down, and that's where the Niners play, the city or San Francisco couldn't put anyone else in that stadium. There were like smaller events, but they couldn't attract large entertainment because the building was so run down. And so that's why the Niners said, well, we need a new building. And there was kind of this negotiation with the city, and then they ultimately ended up in Santa Clara. And you see Levi's, if you've been to Levi's Stadium, it's a super nice stadium, up to date, obviously, and they host huge concerts. They hosted the Super Bowl there, and they, you know, do all these other events because it was a renovated building.
I hear they're regretting that decision now, moving it to Santa Clara.
Who, the Niners?
The county or the city. Whoever, I think it's Levi's, whoever owns that stadium, like, they ran into so much, like, red tape because they can't really do anything past, I think, 10 o'clock or something. Like, they're, like, really regretting
it. Because it's in the middle of a very pretty quiet neighborhood.
Oh, it's, like, even the suburbs when they were, like that? Like, oh, my God, yeah.
So, I mean, one side of it is there's like corporate buildings, so you don't really have to worry about that on the weekend. But the other side of it, there's homes, and even though it's like the majority of the neighborhoods aren't like right next to the stadium, some are, but the big vast majority of the neighborhood is near the stadium. The traffic that happens around game time is crazy, and of course, you know, have tailgating, and you have whatever the case may be. It's just freaking congest that whole area. And so the neighborhood, whoever the organizations that control the neighborhoods are like super regretting it. But That's, I mean, it's so funny. Like, SF had that thing with having the Niners leave, and then they attract the Warriors, and the Warriors went to SF, and so this, yeah, it's crazy.
Does it feel like the Warriors kind of like did you? We talked about kind of what you all talked a little bit about, like the Heritage Knights and everything, and how the Warriors are like recognized a lot of that. I mean, you know, the Warriors signed Jeremy Lin, right? So I guess that's a cool thing, you know. He got
was their one Asian American contribution.
Yeah, he got a start here. Yeah, so, but I guess, do you think they could have done more? Like, should they be expected to do more than that? Like, should they have like invested, I guess, like more money like in the community? Like, if they could, should they have done something like they did with Chase but in Oakland? And then, you know, I guess the question of should they have done it, and do they have a responsibility to kind of do that to their fans and everyone?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a question that leads to like, this is why I have conflicting feelings about it, because I do think a lot of the responsibility and blame, I guess, for the Warriors leaving Oakland was on the city itself. Because, you know, on the one hand, you feel like it's unfair to take a team from a city and its community, but on the other hand, I feel like the team and the franchise deserve better than what's being offered. And even though I know, like, there's character in Oracle Arena, and walking across that overpass where, you know, they're selling the dirty dogs, the t-shirts and the hats, and then, you know, sometimes there's the drums that are rolling that on game night. But yeah, in spite of all of that, as a fan, I feel like they deserve better. Because when you walk across that overpass and you're looking down, like, you guys, it's like a slum, right? There's nothing there. There's just trash and railroads. There's no investment. Mm-hmm. And in a way, you start to associate that with the team itself. Like, having such poor facilities and lack of investment in infrastructure, it sort of becomes indicative of the lack of investment in the team itself. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I'm sad to see the team leave the East Bay, and the fact that the city didn't really invest enough in keeping them there. But I'm glad that they're finally getting the type of investment and attention that they've been starved for so long. So it's, you know, it's that conflicting feeling that you just have to roll with.
I mean, I never want to rely on a big organization and say, like, you have to be responsible to support the community. Like it is your absolute duty. I mean, honestly, they can choose to or not, but they do. When the Warriors moved over to Chase, the Warriors organization said in a public statement that they would still be supporting a lot of the Oakland-based community and organizations that they've always been organizing. But, you know, in terms of the sustainability of all that, who knows? In terms from an Asian American perspective, yes, there's always room to do more. There's always a possibility to invest more and to do more. It's up to the players too, but it's not even just the players or the front office. It's, you know, the Warriors do have a community organizing arm of the organization to outreach to the local community. But I don't want to say if they're not doing enough right now that they're at fault at that. Because, I mean, I say that in a way where it's like, we shouldn't just rely on the Warriors or even just right. There's just like a lot of other issues that we should take care of.
Yeah. If you're relying on a basketball team for things other than basketball, you're probably doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think, yeah, I've come to this issue a lot, and it just seems like these sports teams are, they hold such emotional weight inside of our hearts and minds. But
yeah, definitely.
At the end of the day, they're businesses. And for some reason, we hold them to sometimes like a higher standard than other companies or employees, because they are, I guess, are like kind of like ingrained in community in some way. And I wonder if that's fair, or is it wise to do that? And should we just kind of see them as generally as companies? And, you know, it's kind of like this give and take between the city and a team, where it's like, oh, yeah, you can have a arena here and maybe we can help you with some stuff there, but you have to like invest in our communities. And if they don't do that, then you just say, okay, like have fun in the city, or have fun in Las Vegas, or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it should be ignored how much the success of a team can really uplift a whole community or a whole area. I mean, that's why we have sports teams in general, right? For those who enjoy sports, or even those who don't even watch sports could understand how, I mean, if you think about the phenomenon of just the performance of a group of men in basketball can really tie a whole area and community together. I mean, that is just amazing, especially when they win championships. And I was there at the first parade when they won in 2015. I mean, that was special. Like, being around that environment, people everywhere, the streets were packed. I also saw the players from like the super far back because people were there super early, and I was like, oh man, we should have left early.
Yeah.
But the whole area was just packed with people, and everyone was happy. No drama, no bad things happened. Everyone was just all about the Warriors. And I think just something for that, for culture, is something that's really truly remarkable. And I think that's the biggest value that a sports team can really bring. And then from a financial aspect of it, yes, you know, what can you take from that buy-in from the community and the city that you represent? How do you turn that into a tangible change with the money that we pay you, you know, to go see you?
Yeah, I was going to say there was a nice parade, but the workers' revolution didn't occur. I'm not asking for the workers' revolution, but you know, nothing like that.
Yeah, really quick, to your point, Ray, I think that like there's a sense of pride and ownership too in having the Warriors franchise live in Oakland, because honestly, the East Bay doesn't really have too much.
Yeah,
you know, SF lost the Raiders. City, the Peninsula, exactly. They lost the Raiders, Peninsula, Silicon Valley, and yeah, the East Bay belonged to the Warriors. So yeah, there's that sense of pride and ownership embedded to that team, and to take it away from them, whether they're successful or not, is deeply painful. Like we talked about, you think about how the Raiders were relocated to Las Vegas. Even though, you know, it's different because the distance is much farther, it was incredibly painful for the fans and the community. So I feel like it's more part of having your, I guess, more part of your identity or something you identify with taken away from you, especially when they just start to experience success.
That's a good
point.
It's
really painful.
Yeah. No, that's true. I actually, when I became a basketball fan, I didn't grow up a Hawks fan. I just grew up kind of like a fan of basketball in general, because the Hawks were so middling or poor that I just didn't really care about them too much. So I was never really tied into a city, I think, until probably when the Hawks started doing well in 2015. I think that's when they really peaked. So it's interesting and good to kind of hear the perspectives from people who are like tied to their homegrown teams. Do you all think that people would have cared less if the Warriors were still bad when they moved to the city?
Do you think move would? It wouldn't matter. So no, it would not matter less. I think because the Oakland fan base is more upset about them leaving, period, and not leaving because all of a sudden they're now good. I think they were. Yeah. They still would be pretty upset. And then this is, you know, you can tell the loyalty of the fan base by the fact that Oracle was sold out 10 straight seasons from 2005 to 2015, right? So people love them regardless of how good they were, you know?
Even if they sucked, yeah.
Exactly.
I remember that.
I think a bigger question would be what happens to the SF fan base and corporate sponsorship when they do become bad eventually? Mm-hmm. Because Steph won't play forever. Yeah. Clay won't play forever. Steve Kerr won't coach forever. I mean, freaking Joe Lacob and Peter Gruber won't be the owners forever. So what will happen to the fan base over there when there will be an era to where we kind of have to go into a rebuild, right? I mean, rare do we become a franchise becomes like the Spurs, where they're so good for so long. But even then, now, like, the Popovich era is starting to dwindle down, you know?
I know what's going to happen. They're going to move back to
Please take us back.
Wait till the next era.
Yeah. They're probably unfortunately in too deep to move back to Oakland. Maybe not.
Yeah, they're way too deep.
Yeah.
They're way in too deep.
Yeah. It was like $1.4 billion, I think, just for the stadium. Privately financed.
I'll tell you this though. Wait, Baldwin, have you gone to Chase yet?
No, I've actually I've never been to Chase. I've been to Oracle, but I haven't been to Chase yet.
I will say
you should go. It's nice.
It's freaking nice. Like,
I know. I know. I'm planning to, just I haven't found a good time to go yet. But it's in the works.
Yeah, it was so funny too, because before I went to a game in Chase, I was definitely one of those people. I was like, man, I don't want to go there because, you know, I went to Oracle and I didn't like the Warriors leaving. And then, you know, a friend of mine asked, he's like, hey, I have a free ticket if you want to go. And I was like, okay, sure. And when I got there, I was like, okay, this is pretty damn nice. Like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Like inside, outside, the whole area. I was like, okay. I mean, I'm still upset about it, but damn, this is a nice area.
Yeah. No, it's like when I find, you know, when you move into your first like decent apartment and you're like, man, like I used to be like, you know, hard, like roughing it. And I'm like, okay, I could get used to this.
Like, oh shit, the bathrooms don't stink and like piss and
you know,
but things work and the seats. Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to change. Yeah, no, I get it. Oracle was charming, but that's about it. It was very charming. Yeah. No, definitely. I think that's what getting into like actual on the court basketball, that's what it feels like the Warriors have for so long tried to be the Spurs and trying to like have long-term development. It does not look like they're trying to trade away the young players like Wiseman, Kuminga, and Moody. And I think part of that's probably a lot like, oh, we have to be good for a while to put people in our seats. And
Yeah. And that's true. I love Jordan Poole. He's a solid player. Yeah. Kuminga, the Rook. Oh man, the future is bright. I'm loving this team. I'm getting a lot of 2015 vibes from them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're kind of in a rough patch at the moment, but you know that it's like midseason. Steve Kerr's probably like, look, you know, we're gonna be in the playoffs. Let's just not push ourselves too hard here.
Yeah. Draymond's out too, and I think he. And Clay.
Wiseman's not back yet, so
Clay's still getting his legs, you know.
You got to integrate Clay too, because last few games, like him, when he's in the game, like Wiggins and Poole, like their production goes down dramatically.
Yeah,
so I think it's still a filling out process.
I think Wiggins has to find his role. I mean, he'll get his shots and he'll get his minutes. Jordan Poole, I'm a little concerned about if he's not engaged, right? And he got a lot of playing time while Clay was out, and he definitely showed a lot of promise, but how is he going to do when he's not going to get as many touches, you know?
Yeah,
no, for sure. Yeah, Poole is probably, if they were bringing him off the bench a little, like even before Clay came back, I think, just to get him in that six-man sort of role. So it would just be interesting once Clay gets back, kind of who they end up playing, you know, in crunch time. Is it going to be kind of like you kind of Steph and Draymond, Wiggins, and then, you know, if Clay's looking good enough, you put Clay there, and then who do you put in as your fifth guy? You know, will it be Poole?
Yeah, who's got the hot hand?
Like
Iguodala too. He's still there.
I don't know, which just makes me feel like we should, the Warriors, I've always felt that they should kind of trade their young pieces for even if it's not like a star, but like a above average to good starter.
Yeah. Role player.
Yeah. They should really go for that.
Hey, can I ask you a question, Baldwin? So I think I read somewhere in a report where when the Warriors moved to Chase and they started playing, they have like the Oakland jersey. So on the front of it, it'll say Oakland. And I guess someone said,
old school.
Yeah. But I guess someone said like they never actually had a jersey while they were playing in Oracle. They never actually had a jersey that said Oakland. I mean, they had the town jerseys, but they didn't ever actually have the jersey that said Oakland. And so someone, I think on Twitter or someone like that, was like, huh, like you left Oakland and you finally have these jerseys that say Oakland, you're kind of, you know, pandering to the Oakland crowd. Because it's like almost like they're acknowledging the fact like, hey, we know we left you, but look, our players are wearing your jersey with the city. Like
it's 100% that like, throughout the history of the Warriors, they've never had a jersey that like specifically represented Oakland. Like they have the jerseys that said San Francisco, it said the city, yeah. and then the rest of them just said Warriors.
Yeah.
So it's definitely like pandering to the Oakland crowd. Like the perception or like what they're trying to give off is say, hey, we're remembering our history.
Yeah, exactly.
But like no history with the jerseys there in Oakland.
Yeah, they're like, hey, even though we left you, but look, we have a jersey with your name on it. That's okay, yeah, right?
I don't even really like those jerseys, to be honest. I don't think they look too good. I like the jerseys from the 2000s when it actually said the Warriors and it's like a little bit shiny.
Oh yeah.
If they brought that back, it would be sick.
Throwback.
Yeah. Is it almost like the Warriors are kind of profiting off the culture but not actually representing, not actually like you're supporting it? Almost like I'm kind of big on like this capitalization of culture and how it's like commodity.
Right. I mean, the cynicism in me, and it sounds like in you, could look at it that way, where it's like, okay, we're just trying to appeal to maybe someone who lives in Oakland and be like, oh, okay, now that they're over there, but at least they have an Oakland jersey, I'll go buy it now, kind of thing, you know? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I feel like it's a little bit of both because, you know, of course, more different types of jerseys means more jersey sales.
More money, yep.
But I do believe, exactly, but I do believe that the Warriors are really, like, have the intention and are really trying to keep that sort of culture and heritage of Oakland. And I think that stems from the community and their love for the team. And also, like, the players, too. Like, I don't think they didn't really want to leave Oakland.
Yeah.
Like, Draymond, Steph, Clay, like, they were really proud to have a team in Oakland. And to move to San Francisco, I think, you know, left kind of a void. So it's also, like, them pushing the team to remember its, you know, its history and its heritage and its culture.
And they got to cross that bridge. Man.
Yeah.
Man.
I think
Steph lives in Atherton or something like that. He lived in... he lived in the East Bay, or it was like North Bay for a minute. He had a huge house, but then he recently just moved to the peninsula.
Oh, he did.
I totally be kidding.
I think he lived in like Walnut Creek for a while.
Yeah.
I think like I read the article that you sent us, Jeffrey, and it said that actually the only person on the Warriors who had a condo or was living in San Francisco was Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
And everybody else was in the East Bay, right?
That's so predictable, honestly. I don't know. If it was someone who's gonna be KD.
The timestamp of that article, or just like the context of it when he's still talking about like the 2019 finals, it's like, oh god.
In the finals.
Yeah.
I know.
I'm like, oh, it hurts. Geez, don't bring it up. 2019 and 2016, those are just blacked out from my memory.
Yeah, 2019 was 2019 is kind of just like you have the both years actually. You kind of have the reason of injuries as to why like the Warriors were able to make it. So
it felt like a Empire's downfall. Honestly,
yeah.
Like in just one series, like the entire franchise felt like it toppled.
We're like, oh man,
it's not the actual truth, but that's what it felt like at the time.
It felt like
losing
that.
KD and then losing Clay and then losing the finals.
And then also to top it off with KD leaving shortly after that, we're like, oh man, it's over.
And also that was the last game in Oracle too, when Clay went down. So that was a big moment.
There was kind of like this interesting what if, like, would the Warriors be better off if they just lost game 5 of that series? Clay doesn't tear his ACL. Kevin Durant, I guess, still tears his Achilles.
I mean, that's hard to say. Now we're just looking in retrospect. Like, yeah, what if KD didn't go down? What if, you know, what if the ball didn't go in that one play?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So thank you all for coming on this journey with me. And I just wanted to close it off on a happy note. Instead of a cynic, like very cynical, kind of like, oh, the Warriors are just trying to sell the culture kind of note. So what's your fondest memory of being a Warriors fan?
Oh, man.
Ooh. Okay. There's so many, honestly.
Yeah. I think, okay, so I feel like mine would be, I'd say, is when the Warriors, 2007, the We Believe team, mm-hmm. beat the Mavericks in the playoffs in 2007. Because, like, that was probably the highest level of excitement I've ever experienced as a Warriors fan. And, you know, possibly even more than when they won their first championship. Mm. And the reason is because I feel like that was a culmination of all the misery that Warriors fans have experienced watching the team. And then, you know, when they won that series, it was just immense gratification. Like, an analogy would be like if you're in the desert and all you know is defeat, and then you find that one pool of water with the win of the series. And, you know, like, they were underdogs. They were the eighth seed facing a number one seed Mavericks team. That won, like, it was like 65, 67 games.
Yeah.
And they were projected to win the championship, too. So
Dirk was MVP that year. I remember,
Yeah, he was MVP. It was, like, a historic season for the Mavericks team. So it's something, like, as a fan, as a Warriors fan, it's something that we thought we'd never see. That was the first playoff win in like, 13, 14 years or something. So that was, like, a huge, huge Warriors moment for me.
Nice, Baldwin. Going back to the roots.
Yeah. We believe days. Yeah.
Oh, man. I can't pick one, honestly. There's so many. So.
You can pick two, three, whatever comes to mind.
Just two? just three? There's so many. Okay, honestly, the first thing that comes to mind, I wasn't there at the game, but I remember watching it at a bar. It was Clay's 37-point quarter. Ooh. I remember everyone was going nuts.
Insane.
It was going nuts because you're just like, this is not possible. This is video game. Like, this guy is seriously on fire. He could not miss. And some of the shots that he was taking, I think once a month I watch those highlights just because I want to. And I was like, man, that shit was amazing. And then also,
so
hyped up. And then also another one. Is Steph's 3-point winner against OKC in OKC?
OKC, man, that was a huge.
I was watching that at a bar too. That was crazy. He just pulls up near half court. He's like, "I'm just gonna end this game right now." Boom! And I was like, "Oh shit!"
Yeah.
That shit was crazy. Okay, one more.
Okay,
that's on my list.
One more. Also against OKC was when we came back in game six. Clay? Game six, the birth of game six, Clay. Dude, man. I was fucking freaking out when I was watching that. I was like, oh my God, game six Clay is born. Oh man, Clay is probably my favorite player on the Warriors.
Yeah, Clay just has his, he has Rocco, his dog, is Rocco.
Yeah,
and he just, his boat, just like...
He's such a character, dude.
Yeah, he's really
He's so chill, Love his demeanor.
Yeah, Clay's is like type. Yeah, he's like a type of guy. I know. Like, a funny story is that Warriors have been trying to get Clay and Steph to kind of draw more fouls using kind of like the dark arts and a little bit of everything, but they were just like, they just don't want to do it. They're just like, I'm not going to do it. Yeah, and I'm just like, I really respect that. Even though they probably could, probably get like two or three more points that way. Like, on their averages, but they don't. Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
I guess just to step into this, too, my favorite Warriors memory is, I think, when they swept the Trailblazers in 2019. And just watching them, like, first of all, it was just because it was this throwback to the 2015-2016 Warriors without Durant. And just, like, watching them play that way again.
Because a lot of people were like, oh, KD's down. How are they going to do? Kind of thing.
And they just totally destroyed them. Sweep them.
We got this.
Yeah, demolished. Yeah.
It's all good.
Yeah, I think just remember.
Man.
Yeah.
Poor Dame Lillard. I love Dame Lillard, too. He's the Oakland product. Yeah. Boy, he needs to get out of Portland. Dame, you need to get out of Portland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Dame time, for sure. He's big time.
Dame time.
But he's just not getting any help.
Can I also say
I'm so glad we didn't trade Klay Thompson. Do you remember back then?
Kevin Love, I remember that.
Best decision not made ever. That was seriously like, oh man, I'm so glad that never happened.
Yeah, it's so crazy how much rode on that one trade that didn't happen. Like, if they did that trade, like, so much would be different. Like, would the Warriors have had that dynasty?
No, I don't think so. I mean,
they wouldn't have gotten KD.
Yeah, no.
Like, the whole you know, balance of the league wouldn't have shifted, the super teams and all that. So it's so much history that goes through the Warriors, right? It's crazy.
It's in the multiverse.
Yeah, somewhere there is Kevin Love has a Warriors jersey right now. And
Kevin Love's in a Warriors jersey. Yeah. Clay is in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Oh god, that would be so sad.
Yeah.
I just had an image.
Some universe.
Yeah.
In some universe, the Warriors are still playing against LeBron and the Cavs for like the 10th straight year.
Yeah, exactly. They're just in a perpetual battle every finals.
It felt like it was going to be that way for a while. Yeah. Although I'm glad they got out, because it was getting boring after a while.
It was getting boring. I kind of wanted to be like, I mean, I'm happy the Warriors kept being in the finals, but I wanted someone else. But then when we did get someone else, it was like, oh man, we're not at full strength. Damn it.
I know.
Yeah. No, that's... Yeah, lots of, like, what if, like, it just reminded me how hard it is to be, like, championship contender and how much luck you have to is involved. Because if, you know, David Lee doesn't get injured, maybe Draymond doesn't play as much. And because of that, he really got a lot of time to, like, play. And he really developed from there. Yeah, honestly, like, with the current Warriors, like, if the D'Angelo Russell trade didn't work out the way it did, then maybe the Warriors aren't as good.
Yeah.
But, you know, NBA trading scenarios are only takes one, and the Wolves really want D'Angelo Russell. So the Warriors took advantage of that.
We fleeced them,
dude. Yeah.
So bad.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we had to do what we had to do.
Yeah. No, it's, only takes one. Only takes one. All right, well, thank you, Ray. Thank you, Baldwin, for coming on, talking everything Warriors. You know, I really appreciate your insight.
For sure.
Especially me, like, I'm a transplant. I don't know much about, like, the history of it, but so I'm glad to hear some native perspectives on it.
Yeah, of course. We're happy to be on. Yeah. That was really fun,
really
conversation
fun.
Talking about the Warriors. I haven't done that in a while.
It was fun talking basketball. We usually talk about movies.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Well, you know,
it's fun talking basketball, talking sports.
Yeah, well, you had that basketball movie crossover with Boogie.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Which, by the way, Alan didn't like. So I just want to put that out there. Alan hated Boogie. He is against representation. No, I'm just kidding.
He hates Asian people.
He hates Asian people because he does not like Boogie. I liked Boogie. I'm putting it out there.
Okay.
He's not here to defend himself. Sorry, Alan.
Gosh, I still haven't seen it yet. I heard it was okay. It wasn't fantastic. And yeah, I guess basketball movies, I'm just kind of like, you know, I'm not, if I want to watch basketball, I'm just going to watch basketball. Like, I don't need anything else there.
But yeah. But if you're a fan of basketball movies in general, like Above the Rim, He Got Game, Coach Carter, White Man Can Jump, it follows that same formula, and it mostly is a homage to those movies with an Asian American lead.
That's
which is what I like.
Me.
I was like, that's what I expected. Okay. Yeah. And that's what I got.
Okay.
Yeah. That's all. Yeah.
There you go. That's Ray's pitch. Watch there you go, Jeffrey.
It's a White Man Can't Jump with Asian people in it, I guess. Which intrigues me. Okay, well, I know, Ray, Baldwin, you all have we've kind of talked about a little bit about your podcast. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Oh, sure thing. Yeah. Real Asian Podcast, check us out. Find us on all podcast platforms. We're a show that talks about, very similar to Jeffrey, the intersection between culture, society, but with movies, specifically AAPI-centric movies.
Check us out, Real Asian Podcast.
Yep, and we are currently preparing for season 4. We're on a season break, but all of our stuff is out right now. You could check season 4 will be coming sometime this year. I will definitely have it before 2022 ends.
Yeah, should hope so.
Yeah, let's hope so. Yeah, you know, we got a lot of time. It'll happen. Yeah. But it'll come. Season 4 coming at you.
Do you have some highlights that you can share? Is it all top secret right now?
We are changing things up a little bit. So historically, if you look at our episode feed, we focus on just the movies, and that's pretty much the lineup that we do. But for season 4, we're actually changing up a little bit. We're going a little bit more topical. So similar to your show, and it was inspired by your show a little bit, Jeffrey, we're going to talk, you know, topics or what's trending within the movie space, within the cinema space. So we're not just talking about movies. Some movies will be in there too, but we'll be doing some more topical conversations and debates.
Ooh, okay. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. No, definitely always love a good topical debate. So,
yeah.
All right.
Exactly. Like, what is the best Asian American movie in the world?
Ooh.
I mean, okay. It's pretty obvious.
Is it obvious?
I know what you're going to say, Ray.
What's
you're going to say Rush Hour. No.
it might actually be Rush Hour.
Rush Hour or Mulan, for sure.
Okay. Are we talking about the live action or the animated?
Yeah. Or Ghost in the Shell, the one with Scarlett Johansson. Best Asian American movie for sure.
Okay.
All right. Looking forward to some hot takes.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks again, Ray, and thanks again, Baldwin. And looking forward to hearing you all some more on Real Asian Pod, and hope to have you all back on soon.
Thanks for having us, Jeffrey.
Thanks, Jeffrey.